All right, what's up, everybody? Religion of Speed podcast. We're actually going to get this thing started here. We've been bullshitting now for about 15 minutes, but what's up, Chris?
Hey, man, I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, so we missed a couple weeks there because, unfortunately, Chris came down with the Rona, which, as you were describing, was not a pleasant time.
It is very unpleasant. For those who say it's like the flu, it's like having the flu for two solid weeks.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing is you think you're going to get better and you just experience another symptom.
Yeah.
And it just continues. It's hard to go back to work. You don't have a lot of energy. But I'm happy to be back. I am. I'm happy to be back on my feet. I'm not quite 100% yet, but I'm told that'll take over a month.
That's crazy. That's just like fatigue and stuff.
Yeah, just things getting tired. Like just changing my oil last night. You know, I changed the oil on the BRZ and I went to pull in the 240 and start working on that. And then I had to sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you feel normal for a little while and then you just kind of hit a wall.
Yeah. That's crazy. Did you ever lose your sense of taste and smell and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was trippy.
I bet.
Like at first you kind of get that smell where you can smell the inside of your sinus, like when you get really sick.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And it stays that way for about 2 days. At least that's what it did for me. And I thought that's what they meant by losing your sense of taste and smell, because that's all you could taste.
Okay.
But right after that, it just entirely goes away. It's almost like your tongue's been numbed and you can't smell anything. Yeah.
That's just such a weird symptom. Like I don't understand what in the body would cause that, but I'm also not a doctor, so.
It's neither am I, yeah. Yeah, I can fix things with, you know, nuts and bolts, but when it comes to bodily fluids, that's not for me.
No, we're not doing that one.
Yeah, but it's losing, it's kind of wild, and it slowly comes back, but you retain the ability to taste sweet and bitter.
Okay.
So I was ordering a lot of really spicy food. I could eat spicier food than I've eaten in years.
See, that's kind of funny because my mom, she got on a certain medication for her anxiety stuff. And somehow in that process, she lost her sense of taste and smell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was the same thing. Like she could only taste like super sweet, spicy, you know, that kind of stuff. She could actually like taste and stuff. But as far as I understand, she's still not 100%. Like, that never really came back 100%.
Is it supposed to kind of stabilize when she's been on it for a little while?
I don't know. I think it was just one of those kind of, like, weird side effects that they didn't, like, 1% of people get type thing. And, of course, she was that 1%. But...
Well, so the doctors don't even know what to do with it then.
Yeah, because I think she says she switched medications and stuff, too. Even then, it still never came back completely. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Right?
I hope she gets that back.
To her benefit, though, they do live right across from a field in Michigan where, you know, they spray cow manure in the summer for crops, and she can't smell that anymore. So there is that.
That is nice. That's really nice.
At least you don't have to deal with the bad smells, too.
And that's one thing I noticed coming back to work at Aspen, because that's one thing that they don't tell you about guys who work in the automotive industry, but most of them eat nothing but garbage.
Yeah.
And the result is it's generally pretty smelly in an enclosed area.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first few days back, I didn't notice anything. And the other day I came in and sat in the office. I'm like, it smells like a sewer in here. Where did this come from?
So before you caught the Rona and were out for 2.5-3 weeks, you went out to IMI and actually did some drifting.
I did. It was really exciting. I'd been working on my 240 to get it ready to take to a track for a while.
Yeah.
And you know they say about race cars, it's, they're never really ready.
No, you just go out anyways.
Right. Yeah. and that was the first time I just said, you know, screw it and take my car to the track. And it was a blast. Compared to autocross, it was so different. The crowd was completely different. Still really friendly, still really helpful, but it was like the Wild West on that track.
Yeah, the guys at PPIR in the Time or Track Attack series, like, they can be a little uptight sometimes. Some of them can be really uptight. A lot of them are really cool, really laid back, but, you know, it's all very structured.
Yes.
But from what you were telling me, that was just like... complete chaos.
Oh, yeah. I bought my wristband and, you know, I put my helmet on and I realized I didn't even know how to get onto the track. I flagged somebody down in a yellow vest. I was like, hey, how do I get on there? And do I need to be waved on? They're like, yeah, just go over there. Somebody will wave you in.
That's crazy. Yeah, just, you know, whatever.
And so I pull on and yeah, and there's just E36 and E46 BMWs just spinning out all over the place. I'm actually glad that I upgraded my brakes before I went out there because it kept me out of a few people's bumpers.
Yeah. And that's really important because you drove your car there, right?
I did. I drove it up to IMI Thornton, about 30 miles. I drifted it until I had just enough tire tread to get home. And then I drove it back.
Yeah, we still you're using to get tires on the thing again now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tires on the back are completely destroyed now.
Yeah. Hey, but that's what a drift car is for.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And I'm excited to shred some more tires in it. And honestly, that 240 has just been more reliable than I've ever had any reason to ask of it.
Yeah.
It's easy to keep running. And I honestly expected to break down on the way home.
Yeah.
And it made it home. And I've driven it to work since then. And it's held up very, very well.
Yeah. I mean, like we were saying the other day when we had it on the lift, it's like, yeah, it has some leaks and stuff, but every old Nissan does. And
yeah.
That's one thing people don't like. Everybody hates on the KA.
Yes.
You know, they're like, oh, it doesn't make any power, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, it's not the most powerful engine. It does make some decent torque, but.
Usable torque,
too. Usable torque, yeah. But yeah, it's solid, you know?
Yeah.
You don't really hear of any major issues with those things, so.
Yeah, it's. I'm not going to lie, I wanted more power when I was on the track.
Oh, I bet.
There were a couple of moments when I was fully sideways and wide open. And I still didn't have enough to keep the tires going.
Yeah.
But again, that's on me with technique too, because you can make something with almost no horsepower go sideways if you beat it hard enough.
What size tires are you running?
I'm running a 215 45 17.
Okay, so that's not too wide.
It's not too wide, but the wheel I've got it on right now is a 9 and 9.5 inch wheel.
Okay.
So I had to run a mild stretch. Yeah. And one thing I wasn't counting on with the stretch is you can really feel the difference when the car transitions from grip to drift when the sidewall is less rigid.
Yeah.
It's a little less defined, that transition.
Okay.
Well, like when I had 215s on, I believe it was an 7.5 inch wheel, it didn't need any stretch and you could feel the car snap.
Okay.
When you transition from grip to sideways.
Hmm. See, I would almost think that'd be the opposite, but I guess that does make sense because, like, you know, you're going to get some sidewall flex with the narrower wheel. So,
okay.
You know, you're gonna grip, and your sidewalls are gonna like move over pretty much. You know, your tire tread's gonna move independently of your wheel pretty much a little bit, and then when it starts to drift, it's not gripping anymore, so it's gonna snap back into place.
So that's that kind of rigid shock you feel when the car goes sideways. Yeah, but and it almost feels muddy when they're stretched.
Hmm.
Like it's less defined.
Yeah, I guess that, like I said, that makes sense because you're never. With the stretch, it doesn't really have an opportunity to move around as much.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, but in my head, I would think it'd kind of be the opposite. But I guess when you really think about it, yeah, there's going to be, you're not going to be able to feel it when it goes from grip to drift as much when it's stretched because it's just always going to be the same, like contact area for wheel to tire
because there's less room for the rubber to actually flex because you've taken away some of that elasticity with the stretch.
Mm. Well, that's like with the Fiesta when I was running Track Attack last year. I was running 225 45 16s.
Okay.
And this year I'm running 215 45 16s.
So you went to a narrower tire.
So a narrower tire, and I'm liking it a lot more because I was getting way too much rollover in the tire with the 225s. It was just the 8-inch wheel wasn't quite enough for those, at least for, like, if it was a normal street tire, a 225 is fine. But these are 200 treadwear tires, so they always make them wider. Like, that 225 is equivalent to probably a 245 street tire.
Oh, wow. So that's a big, bulky tire.
Oh, yeah. They cheat on purpose. Because all the manufacturers want to have the best 200 treadwear tire. And everybody's usually restricted in their class to a certain size. But it's just the size that's printed on the tire.
Right. They're not going to measure it.
Right. Exactly. So the manufacturer's like, yeah, we'll give you a 215 wide tire that's actually a 235. Like, we don't, like, if that makes it so our tires win.
Right.
You know, then, Yeah, we'll do that.
Because then people are going to buy our tires.
Exactly.
It's kind of like the whole Tiregate thing with Reese Millen and Pro Drifting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's wild. The tire company actually stamped DOT lettering
right
into raced compound rubber.
Yeah.
And they only caught him because they were testing a temperature. They started testing tire temperature after the drift runs.
Oh, okay. That's how they caught him?
Yeah, because Reese Millen would always kind of back off. And then they would spray his tires down with water.
And then temp them?
Yeah, and then before the judges could temp them. So they kind of had to, like, jump in. And I'm told that, you know, he's a fantastic driver. He didn't need to do that. I imagine it was probably pressure from his sponsors.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's the old adage? If you're in racing, if you're not cheating, you ain't winning.
That's true.
You know, like, every little advantage you can get, like, and I'm sure it didn't actually, you know, per the rules, technically he was okay. Like, it was a DOT stamped tire.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like, go ahead.
So within the rules, like, technically, if that's what it said, if it said this tire has to have a DOT stamp,
right,
then that was legal. Now, that's why most people are like, it needs to be a DOT tire that is mass produced and sold that you can go buy.
Right. That anybody could get off Tire Rack.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm told Daigo Saito ran into the same thing, but I know less about his situation.
Yeah, I don't know.
But he had a 2,000 horsepower Sorter.
Of course he did.
Watching him slide, he would leave so much smoke over the track that there was still smoke when the next guys ran.
Daigo is crazy. Have you seen his Yaris?
No.
His drift Yaris?
I haven't.
So, he got a GR Yaris, which we're going to talk about here in a minute.
Okay.
But he got one of those GR Yaris, which are super rare. They only made so many of them, right? And then he turned it into a rear-wheel drive, 2JZ-powered drift car. I'm like, you asshole. Not only do you get the car that we don't even get in the United States right. that I really want, then you just tear everything out right. of it and just make it into...
You just cut the firewall out and you put a 2JZ in it?
It's like, come on, man. But, oh well. But yeah, drifting at IMI, so... I'm assuming you're going to go back.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's right now you can go any weekday for $100 and run around the track, which is a little expensive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, considering you get unlimited track time, I think if I showed up with enough tires, it would be, you know, I'd get my money's worth.
Right.
But I also have to save up enough to get that many tires.
See, I have yet to be out to IMI, and I need to because, like, when I had Jake Caldwell on the show, he's part of the Yankee Zoco crew.
Okay.
He's the guy that built that Drift 52 Chevy, I think I was showing you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're always out there at IMI, and he was telling me, hey, you got to come out, you got to come out. And I just, with COVID this year, I kind of locked myself down and didn't really go anywhere. But
I'd say you made the right call. Sadly, racetracks have kind of become COVID protest zones.
Yeah.
Which sucks because I'm a gearhead who also doesn't want to die of a virus.
Right. Or at the very least, I don't want to be sick for 2-3 weeks with what you had.
Dude, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
Right.
You know, there's people who are like, well, if I get it, I get it. It's like, hey, if you can avoid getting it, maybe do that.
Yeah, I suggest that. Yeah, I think people don't understand just how shitty it is or the fact that, you know, a lot of people have had long-term health complications afterwards, like lung problems or never getting their taste of their smell or taste back. Like
some people experience long-term fatigue.
Right.
You know, some people have trouble focusing. I've had to double check all my parts write-ups since I've come back just because, you know, it's hard to just hit the focus where I was before.
Right.
I'm told it'll come back, but it's definitely inconvenient.
Yeah, I bet. So as of right now, I'm avoiding racetracks for the most part. At least PPIR is pretty good about everybody distancing, wearing masks and stuff. So
that was one thing that blew me away was PPIR really took the initiative. You know, everybody's wearing masks. The food truck's wearing masks.
Right.
The way they have the autocross set up, you don't have to be close to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Most people just sat in their cars and waited to be waved onto the track.
Right.
And I think that's a much better way to look at it. And I think that's how you get tracks that don't get shut down because they're sneezing, you know, they're scoffing at all these standards.
Right.
But yeah, at IMI, nobody was wearing a mask. People were shaking hands. There were just crowds of people right up on each other.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, just as chaotic as the drift track.
Right. Then see, normally I'd be all about that because like I always felt like from everything I've heard about IMI and everything I've seen about it, it's almost like like Ebisu, from everything I understood about Ebisu, it's just kind of, you show up, like, it's just very casual, go out on track, have fun. Like, it's not, less regulations. It just, it has like a Japanese vibe to it. Most American tracks are just very strict, you know, like, and with your time and, you know, I got to have all this insurance stuff. And like, I just feel like, yeah, that track is the Wild West. It is the drift course, you know.
And yeah, and there's one liability sign right when you drive in, basically saying, you know, we're not responsible for anything, and that's about it.
Yeah.
they kind of laughed at me when I asked if I needed to go through tech inspection.
Yeah.
They're just like, no, just go out on the track.
Yeah, it's fine.
You're leaking oil, that's fine. I mean, fine. The next guy will scrub it up with his tires.
To be fair, the track attack, whatever you just called that.
Well, the...
Not safety inspection. Well, you just said the words.
Tech inspection?
Tech inspection. Thank you. Jesus Christ. Maybe I'm getting COVID. My brain's not working.
I hope not.
The tech inspection at PPIR isn't exactly thorough, considering you fill it out yourself.
It's true. But at least you go through the checkpoint list.
Right.
And if you spew oil all over the track, then they're like, hey, you said you weren't leaking oil.
Right. At least they got that.
Yeah, it was and they didn't even have the cars staggered. I would purposefully wait until the bigger drift groups would come off the track so I had a little extra room. Because there were people, you know, hanging out of Miata passenger seats with selfie sticks. Like, and they would spin out, and then they would just sit there and wait while everybody drifted by them, taking pictures. God.
I need to get out there. This place seems like a goddamn riot.
It was, yeah, honestly, sounds the pandemic, it would be a much easier place to meet people and make friends. And and I met a few people who were really helpful. One guy who had another S14, same year as mine, he had turboed his 2 days prior to the event on stock internals.
Oh, geez.
And blew it up on the way to the event that day.
Of course. sounds right.
But he just left his 240 on the side of the highway and hitched a ride with a friend because he didn't want to miss the event. And
damn, that's some dedication.
Yeah, that's I wouldn't leave a 240 on the side of the road.
No.
I saw more S chassis at this event than I've seen since I moved to Colorado.
Yeah.
There just aren't a whole lot up here.
No, because they never really sold many out here because, you know, most people, well, they don't sell rear-wheel drive cars here very much. So
yeah, it makes sense.
You know, because we, well, used to get snow. It's like 50 degrees 2 days after Christmas right now, but...
Yeah, it's funny. My family in Tennessee sent me pictures of snow in Tennessee, and it never snows there.
Yeah. Well, we are getting that El Nino or...
Oh, La Nina?
La Nina one right now, so we're getting all the warm air this winter. But, yeah, we went out for a Christmas hike and a Christmas Eve or day after Christmas hike.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, it's fucking gorgeous, though. Might as well.
It's been great. Yeah, and Christmas Eve was kind of cold and yucky, so...
Right.
It's nice to get this good weather.
Yeah.
I'll take that over a white Christmas.
Oh, man. All right. On to some car news, I guess, because we did miss... last time we were talking about, you know, your past and stuff like that, so we didn't get to talk about the topic of the day back a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's kind of old news now, but the new BRZ / Well, FRS eventually. I assume they're going to make an FRS version or 8.6.
Yeah, I think it's the 8.6
now. It's the 8.6
now,
right.
Because Scion no longer exists.
Right. Sad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, new BRZ. So you have a first-gen BRZ.
I do.
So what is your opinion on this new one?
I do not think the aesthetic qualities of it are up to the same standard that the old one set.
Okay.
I think it's the kind of car that looks good. I don't think it looks quite as good as the old one.
Yeah.
I was hoping for a turbo, which I know is, I'm echoing many gearhead sentiments there. Especially because when Subaru teased that it had the 2.4 liter engine.
Right.
There's a turbocharged version of that 2.4 available in the Ascent, the Outback, and the Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have no excuse at that point.
Right.
It's like, I would love to see Boost. The new car. I'm glad that it has another generation, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked it has a second generation. I was like, I know the sales weren't as good as they wanted them to be, which in these days, no rear-wheel drive coupe is going to sell as much as it used to.
Yeah.
It's a niche market,
right?
You know, but yeah, the fact that they're like, you know what, let's keep the chassis, let's update it, let's do some stuff, you know, and make a second generation of it, that is... It's awesome, and Yeah, I mean, this whole segment I'm pretty much calling Toyota is killing it right now. Because they are. Like, out of all the manufacturers, like, you know, I mean, I know that's Subaru, but it's Toyota too.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got the new BRZ / GT86, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
You know, they got the new Supra.
Yes.
And they got the GR Yaris. That's like, okay, that's a, I mean, we don't get the GR Yaris, but they have it, you know. It's like, okay, they're actually trying to do something here, you know.
And, yeah, I'd love to see them bring back the MR2.
Yeah, that's been rumored forever. Like, they keep saying, like, oh, yeah, we're working on, in fact, they were saying for a long time, yeah, we're going to make an MR2 replacement that slots in below the BRZ FRS.
Wow.
Yeah, which I never, like, how are you going to do that?
I guess a 1.3 turbo, maybe?
But it's got to be a bespoke chassis.
That's true. I don't know how they could get away with charging less. Right? Unless they worked with another company, unless it was a collab car.
Right. I was thinking them working with Lotus.
That would be fantastic. And they already have that pre-established relationship.
Right.
Because Lotus has been using Toyota engines for years now.
Right. I think if they made an MR2 / Elise kind of crossover, the Elise can be like more racy, more power, you know, lighter weight, carbon fiber components, all that good stuff to make it like the track day one. And then the MR2 can be steel body panels, a little less power, you know, yeah, the everyday car type thing.
Yeah, and that would be fantastic. That way they could justify charging twice as much for the Lotus.
Right, exactly. Because that's one thing I never understood about the BRZ and Toyota version is they're pretty much the same car.
They are. And they charge two different prices.
Right. It's like I always heard, like, oh, the BRZ has nicer seats. I'm like, that's it, though?
Yeah. Like, you're getting the same power plant, same chat. They roll off the same assembly line.
Right. Same wheels.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to make two different cars like that, at least give us, like, some differentiating. Like, if the interior on the BRZ was, like, way better.
Right.
Then I could understand it, you know? But no, they were the same, and they competed with each other and got confusion and branding, and yeah, I never really understood why they did that.
And yeah, it goes back to like exactly every time you bring the car up, you're not sure what name to call it.
Right. That's not good.
No. And you know about the car.
Right.
Someone who wasn't versed in it, you know, like, yeah. I don't know what this thing is.
Or it's kind of like now if a customer calls into the shop and like, I got an Infiniti Q40.
Right.
What's about this? I'm like, I don't even know what car you're talking about.
Right. And it used to be, I have this Infiniti. It's like, oh, that's a Nissan Pathfinder. Just bring it in.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I had the G35. Oh, that's a 350Z. Oh, I had the QX56. Oh, that's an Armada. You know, like,
yeah,
it was all super easy. And now it just, they're all Q or QX number something. I can't keep track of them.
And the numbers always used to denote displacement.
Yes.
And now they're just numbers.
Yeah.
I don't know what a QX30 is.
Right.
Or, yeah, what's that new, it's got the twin turbo motor that's going to be in the new Z. I think it's the Q45.
That's the Q50.
Q50, okay.
I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and that number means about as much as the 45 did.
Right. Well, because then you can't even differentiate, like, because there's different, like, power levels and different trim levels inside that, and yeah, they screwed the pooch on that. They're just about as bad as modern BMW.
Yeah, and BMW used to have a great structure too, and then they decided they wanted to do what Audi's been doing and have, you know, a perfectly scaled market. You know, have something that fits in absolutely every market segment. And,
right.
You know, like, it's like, we only have a 3 and a 5 and a 7, but Audi has, you know, an A3, A4, A5, A6.
Right. A little bit of everything.
Yeah. And now they've got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Right. And then X 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, and then there's like, so it's like, it'll be like a BMW 335 M258i. Like, yeah. It's just
like, is it an M or isn't it?
Yeah. I don't. They just threw alphabet soup at a wall and just said, yep, there it is. Like,
and I don't understand why no German company can make a car with a name.
Right?
why they always have to be letters and numbers.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because Americans will spend money on something that has a letter and a number
because it's luxurious. I think that's just German, very like German, like, no, this is, you know, like, this is the 235. Like, no. You know, like, this is... this series for this number for this thing and that thing. Like, it's like a lookup chart, and Germans just love that shit, you know?
It's a machine. It doesn't need a name.
Right. Meanwhile, here in America, we're like Mustang.
Right.
You know?
I named my car after a horse.
Yeah. It's like, or at least, and that's what always made me angry about the Nissans, too, when they brought them over here. You know, it's like Sylvia, Fair Lady, even the old Leopards or the...
Yeah. The Altima was called a Bluebird.
Yeah. Like, those are way better names. Like, yeah. I love those names.
My wife has a Honda Fit, and in the UK, that's called the Jazz.
Right.
That's an awesome name for a car.
Right.
Fit is the kind of name that you make fun of. It's a pun.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you can actually fit in that car. Yeah,
you can actually, it doesn't look like you can fit in it, but you can fit in it.
Right. Yeah. Was it, no, I think it was Nissan when they had the Versa hatchback, the first generation.
Yeah.
They had a commercial that had a whole, like, whole bunch of basketball players. Like tall basketball players, and they all jammed in this Versa hatchback, and then it shows the inside view, and they look all tiny in the seats. Like, clearly they built like a 200% size interior of Versa and had him sit in this thing.
That's hilarious.
And they're like, oh man, this is more roomy on the inside than I expected.
And the Versa really was.
Oh yeah, I had a first gen Versa. I moved across country with that thing, with that giant CRT TV in it, a giant round table, vacuum cleaner. Like a small toolbox. I had so much stuff in that car. Like,
all in one trip.
Yeah, all in one trip.
That's impressive.
Yeah. No, that car was like, excuse the pun because I know that's what they were going for, but it was very versatile. God, I hate that. That hurt to say that.
Oh, I think it's funny that they named one the Versa Note. They started taking
right.
like it was a cell phone.
Yeah. Man, the Versa pisses me off because clearly... Okay, they made the Juke, right?
Right.
Yeah. Which is based on the Versa platform.
And it's got a turbo.
And it's got the turbo engine.
Yeah.
And they made the Juke Nismo RS, which had the 215 horsepower version of that motor. It actually made more power. Actually had upgraded internals in that one.
Oh, wow. So it could take even more boost.
Yeah. So they had that with a 6-speed manual, with a limited slip differential, with the front wheel drive only one. They had some of the best Recaro seats they made in those cars. Like, awesome sport seats. It's like, okay, put that drivetrain in an actual hot hatch
right.
and not this weird SUV thing.
This weird thing with ground clearance.
Yeah. They could have made a Fiesta ST competitor.
Yeah, they could have. They could have made a Honda Type R competitor.
Right. And it's like, but instead they put that engine in the bigger now Sentra.
Yeah, those new Sentras are huge.
Yeah, it's the size of an old Altima.
Yeah.
Which it's a little too underpowered for. They never put the RS version of that motor in it, so it only makes 190 horsepower.
Man, and it's just like, CVT only?
And it's CVT.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't understand what Nissan's doing these days.
You know, I'm just happy that they teased the Z.
Right.
Like, I'm with you on that because they could have, you know, imagine offering that in the Altima with a manual. Imagine offering it in the last gen Sentra with a manual.
Okay.
Instead, they put a VR38 in
right.
it and built a concept, you know, GTR Juke.
Right.
Yeah. And like, look, it's beating supercars. It's like, can we buy it? No.
Yeah.
No, you can't buy it.
What's the point? Yeah. I don't understand that. But okay, the Altima, that's another one that pisses me off. I can talk about, I get that in a second. I can talk about Nissan forever. But the Altima right now, you can get that car with all-wheel drive, but only with the old QR25, unfortunately.
Okay.
But they also offer that variable compression ratio 2-liter turbocharged engine.
So it is an actual turbo. It's not...
Yeah.
Okay, because I know that they had they say the variable compression turbo, and it's supposed to be a variable crankshaft, correct?
Yeah. So it actually does vary the compression ratio of the engine.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is technology nobody else has right now.
Right.
And also, they kind of just swept it under the rug. That engine was out for like 2 years before I, a technician who likes Nissan, knew about it. I'm like, why are you hiding this? Like, and why did you not put that with the all-wheel drive? If you had variable compression ratio, turbocharged, all-wheel drive, Altima,
yeah,
that's a very like tech-oriented, like, you know, That's a good selling point. Like, we have one of the most technologically advanced all-wheel drive sedans you can buy.
Yeah.
And so they're like, nah, we're not going to do that.
Maybe they're trying to bug it out. That's the only thing I could think of because you're right. It's that has the potential to be a technological game changer for the whole industry.
Right.
Like Honda did with variable valve timing, or Nissan again with the CVT.
Right.
And that may be where their hangup is, because they have a class action lawsuit they've had to deal with because their CVTs are unreliable. They were the first people to bring CVTs to the market.
Well, they aren't. So GM actually did CVTs back in like the 80s.
Really?
I didn't know that. But if you think the Nissan CVTs are garbage, these things were just atrocious. I think they only made it for a couple of years, just kind of tried them out on some things, and it was a bad experiment. But Nissan was the first ones to like, and I think some European cars used like old CVTs in like the 60s and stuff, but they were more like belt drive, like a snowmobile or something.
Okay.
You know, like really ancient South.
It's really rudimentary.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Nissan was the first ones to be like, no, we're going to try to make this like a legit thing. All of our cars are going to get it. And to be fair, they got a lot better efficiency, and the new generations of CVTs are better, and like every manufacturer is going to it now.
Yeah. And I don't think that would be the case if Nissan hadn't committed and, you know, kind of taken the heat.
Right.
For that new technology. And maybe they're worried about that with the new variable compression.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think Nissan's just a dumpster fire right now, and nobody's actually in charge. Since Carlos Ghosn, like, escaped Japan in a cello box.
He mailed himself out of Japan.
They've just kind of been in chaos mode right now.
Oh, man.
Jesus Christ.
When your embezzling CEO mails himself out of the country.
It's amazing. That's something out of a movie.
Like, it really is. It's like, out of a bad movie.
Like an Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, right? And it wouldn't work in the movie, but it worked in real life.
Right. Absolutely crazy. So back to a Japanese manufacturer that's actually doing some good shit. Toyota, they unveiled just this week, I don't know if you saw, the Supra Targa concept.
I did. It looks amazing.
Right.
Yes.
It has the heritage wing on it, so it's got the old Supra wing and stuff. And like, yes, build that car.
They somehow managed to capture the body lines of the fourth gen in the fifth gen, which is so busy.
Right.
You know, it has so many lines, and, you know, you could tell it was a Supra, but yeah, that Targa top, I see Paul Walker and Vin Diesel racing a Ferrari in it when I look at it like that.
Yeah. Like, you know, for the SEMA car, they did it up in white, which I think did work really well. It showed off their body kit. It's like very, you know, just clean, showed you like, oh, the main focus is the Targa, you know?
Yes.
But I do think if they did it up in orange with the graphics on the side.
Yes.
Like, that's the only car that can have those stupid ass graphics.
It's the only car that can have a charging knight with a lance on the side, and everyone would go crazy.
Right? That's it. That's the only one allowed. You're not allowed to do graphics like that in another car.
Yep, including a Kuki or a Maxima or a Jetta.
Yeah. Yeah, any of those first gen or first movie cars, you can... You know what it was like my third watch of the Fast and Furious when I realized he was driving a Maxima.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. You're like, what is that? Because you did that impressive smoky burnout when but it came from the front wheels.
Yeah.
So you're like, what is that that's front wheel drive? But that VG30 was no joke.
No. But I also grew up in Michigan, and there were no Maximas there.
Really?
Yeah. Fuck no. There were no Japanese cars there for the most part.
Just all American.
Just all American stuff. So I never even knew. I didn't know the Maxima existed for a long ass time, you know?
That Maxima was like, at least back east, and you know, regular car reviews actually did a great job capturing how it's kind of the gearhead's fallback car.
Yeah.
Because it's quick.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's nothing really special about it other than it's got a bulletproof motor that will put out some power.
And you can get it with a manual.
And you can get it with a manual if you're lucky enough to find one.
Yeah, they're pretty rare.
Speaking of manual, that is the only improvement I would have made to that Targa Supra.
Yeah.
The Supra, you know, it caught a lot of flack for collabing with BMW.
Yeah. But
I personally like BMWs.
Yeah.
So when I heard that, I'm like, this is great. BMW builds great sports cars that fall apart in the rain. Yeah. and Toyota built stuff that lasts.
Right.
If, you know, if they do this right, this has the potential to be an excellent car. And the only thing it's missing is a clutch pedal now.
Yeah. I think there's been rumors that, you know, we're going to make one, we're going to make a manual one, we're going to do it. But I don't know. Cause I think while the internet is clamoring for it and stuff, I don't think the people that can actually afford that car give two shits.
I know maybe a couple of people who would buy one because it's a manual, but that's about it. You're right. It's and it's sad because you can look at some of the numbers, like the C7 Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was it, like less than 20% of those sold that were manual?
I believe it, yeah.
And that's sad because that was one of the last, like, real manual, you know, borderline hypercars you could buy.
Right.
And now it's a C8.
That's a dual clutch.
It's dual clutch only. And that's, you know, that's an American Ferrari.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm honestly fine with the C8 having a dual clutch because they really took that car from a sports car to a supercar. And I feel like a supercar needs a dual clutch.
It does. I just want an option.
Yeah, fair enough. I just want to I just want to be able to afford one of those in a few years, you know?
That's a good goal.
Because I think, because they're Corvettes, and Corvettes fall off the cliff of, you know, eventually, like C5s now, or C6s are actually getting pretty, or decently cheap now. So it's like, you know, I don't really like those cars all that much, but you can't argue with the performance you get for the price.
And, you know, if you buy one in the depreciation valley, in like any constant production sports car, you can watch that value go back up.
Right.
Like, you know, the C4s and C5s are cheap right now, but the C3s, they cost more than they used to.
Man, I remember when back in Michigan, you could pick up a C3 for like $500.
Yeah.
Like, and nobody wanted them.
Can't get a running one for less than 10 G's now.
Right. I'm just like, one of these days I will learn and I will buy all these cars and put them in storage somewhere.
It's like that 993 that's sitting in the shop.
Right.
When I was in high school, you could get one for $15K.
Yeah.
Last year, they were worth $100.
Yep.
And now they've, luckily, they did get overspeculated a bit. They're coming back down, but it's still $50,000 or $60,000.
Yeah. I don't think they're ever, everybody was talking, I mean, 5 years ago, people were talking about that bubble bursting, and I just don't think it's going to happen. I think they might level out a little bit, but I think they're going to be worth a lot forever now. Besides that, the other thing, of course, Toyota's doing that I've ranted about already multiple times that we're not getting is that GR Yaris.
So tell me about that. I don't know much about the GR.
So the European Toyota Yaris is completely different than that Yaris we got here.
Okay.
Completely different car.
Hatch or trunk?
Hatch.
Okay.
So in Europe, it's a two-door hatch, and they wanted to go racing WRC.
Okay.
So for luckily for us, WRC was like, nope, you got to do homodulation specials again.
Perfect.
Awesome.
That way we get a taste.
Right. So Toyota got with Gadzooks Racing or Gadzoo Racing.
Okay.
That's the company that makes their rally cars.
Okay. Okay. Did they do the old GT4?
I think they're just their more recent cars.
Okay.
But yeah, so those are the people building the rally cars and they're like, let's make a street version. So they have a 1.6-liter three-cylinder turbocharged engine, makes 250 horsepower.
High compression.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
All-wheel drive, manual, two-door hatchback.
And that's the production version.
That's the production version.
That's fantastic.
It can send up to 80% of the power to the rear wheels.
Oh, wow. That really is a Fiesta Focus ST competitor.
Right?
Yeah.
It's almost like a Focus RS competitor.
Yeah.
You know? Because the all-wheel drive, and I'm just like, that'd be perfect. I want that car because for here, it's the all-around car. Like, you can drive that year-round, it's all-wheel drive. But, of course, they're like, no, Japan and Europe only. I'm just like, why?
Yeah. Well, at least in 25 years, you can import one.
Yay. I'll be 60 years old, but...
Doing donuts in your Yaris.
Right? It's like, oh, I want that car so bad, but of course... America just can't get the cool shit because America doesn't buy two-door hatchbacks.
That's really sad. That's really sad.
Right?
Yeah.
It just wasn't worth it for them to go through the process of certifying that for sale in America. So.
And we were just now starting to get a lot of the really cool stuff.
Right.
You know, we've got the higher horsepower airbox and the manual BRZs.
Yeah.
We got a twin turbo Supra. We're getting a twin turbo Z.
Right.
You know, and we got a Civic Type R.
Right.
Which we never had a Type R.
No. I mean, we got an Accord Type R that says Civic on it, but the thing is huge.
It's gigantic.
Yeah.
But it is real and it's boosted and that's pretty awesome.
Right.
It's a shame how big everything is now, to be honest.
That's why I love my Fiesta, man.
Yeah.
It's one of the last small performance cars you can buy.
Yeah, it's a ditto on the BRZ. It's
right.
It's small. Like, I had it parked next to my 240 last night, and my 240's longer.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, that's, once again, we're like talking about like lightweight small cars. That's why I like the Fiesta. Like, that thing's stock brakes. They're not even any special brakes, but like the only time I've overheated those brakes is that PPIR coming off the oval into that left-hander, which is a second gear corner.
So you're braking from fourth down to second?
I'm braking from fifth. I mean, it was like 120 miles an hour off
that.
Holy
crap.
Yeah. Down to second gear. And like after like four laps of that, my brakes were like, I don't like it.
Just smoking.
Yeah. I actually had to, like, that was the first night of grid life, or first day of grid life. And I actually drove the car back with shitty brakes because it boiled the brake fluid, drove it to the shop and flushed my brake fluid, and then went back the next day and did more laps.
On the same pads and rotors?
Yeah, the same pads and rotors. It was mostly just the brake fluid, but yeah, they were not that happy.
Was it dot three or dot four?
Dot four.
Yeah. Wow, and it still boiled it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it had been a while since I flushed it before, though, so.
Oh, so there was a little bit of water in there.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
But that was, I think I showed you the plastic hub rings that I had.
Yeah,
that melted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I melted the plastic hub rings. That's how hot my brakes got.
Holy crap. And it's two pistons up front, single in the rear?
Single piston front.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it still grips, still stops just fine.
Lightweight, man. You don't need that much.
That is awesome.
That's why Colin Chapman was right.
To add speed, add lightness.
Yeah. Simplify and add lightness, man. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But, well, I think that's kind of going to do it for today for us because, yeah, we've recorded for a while and we still got some stuff to talk about, but we can come back to it next week. It's all electric car stuff anyways, so.
That sounds good.
It's half exciting.
Yeah, I mean, an electric crate swap, that's cool.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of thing like Matt at work. With his truck that he loves.
Oh, yeah.
He needs a new motor now.
Right.
And if he wanted to, I don't see him wanting to, but if he wanted to, he could swap in an electric box instead of going to the junkyard and finding another 5.3 Vortec.
Right.
And, you know, then he has more torque than he would ever have.
Right.
And, you know, he's got a real novelty truck, you know?
Right.
He's got a silent pickup truck.
Yeah. Well, that... I mean, it makes sense, but yeah, we'll talk about that next time. If you want to look it up before next week, and so you guys listening know, EV West electric conversion crate motor, but yeah, we'll talk about that next time around. I do want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song Colors off the album Traveler. Traveler Part 2 actually is out right now. You can find that at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com, which is always, I always love saying, wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. It just has a good ring to it. Yeah, go support those guys, local Colorado, Fort Collins guys. Just a small little three-piece punk band. They're pretty dope. I don't think they're doing any shows right now, but you can go buy their album off that website and, yeah, support some local artists, man.
It's always important.
Right? So, Chris, thanks again for not having the COVID right now and letting us do a podcast. Listen, and hopefully in 2 weeks we'll be back here again to do it again.
Happy to be back, Matt. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Till next time, guys. Peace out.